If you have a Bible or a way to access your Bible today, I want to invite you to find your way to the book of Exodus. We're going to continue our series today on the superheroes of the Bible by looking at really one of the great characters. You know, we've talked about a superhero as someone who is an ordinary person that God uses in an extraordinary way. And it's certainly true of the man we're going to be looking at today named Moses. And there are a lot of things we could talk about the life of Moses that are superhero-like. But one of the great things that Moses did is he liberated an entire nation. Now, you know Moses' story. He was born in the river, or he was born out of the river, almost. And he was given the name Moses when he was rescued and brought into the home of the Egyptians and was raised in the palace of the Pharaohs. But he would defend a Hebrew, and he would run into the wilderness and become a shepherd. And one day he would see the burning bush, and God would speak to him and call him to an assignment he didn't want to do. He would call him to go and liberate the nation of Israel from their Egyptian captors. And so Moses would go and he would literally say to Pharaoh, "Let my people go." And Pharaoh would say no 10 times, and 10 plagues would come on Egypt. Until finally Pharaoh just said, "You know, get out of here." And the moment came, we call it the Exodus because it's the road out of, the way out of Egypt. But just as soon as they start to leave, the text we're going to read this morning tells the story about how Pharaoh changes his mind. And instead of letting them go, he's now going to send 600 chariots and an army to destroy them and to bring them back. And so it becomes this moment. I mean, talk about the ultimate military battle of the Old Testament. It becomes this moment in which what will happen? But as we read the story, we learn that God has been involved in this from the very beginning. He's been orchestrating the events of this story so that this will become one of the greatest moments of redemption and salvation in the entire Bible. And as we read this story in just a moment, I want you to pay attention to Moses' ears, Moses' fears, and Moses' hands. Moses' ears, Moses' fears, and Moses' hands. A little boy was in the park one day, and he was reading this story. And he got to the point of the story where Moses reaches out his hands and the sea opens up. And the Israelites cross through the river. And then when Moses reaches out his hands again, then the waters come back and destroy the armies of the Egyptians. And here's this little kid, you can just see him in the park, and he's reading the story, and he's like, "Yeah! Whoa, go God!" He was loving it. And this guy walks by, this very enlightened skeptic, comes by and says, "What you reading?" And he tells him, "I'm reading the story about how God saved him." He says, "Son, don't you know that didn't really happen? What really happened was," and he began to give his theory. He says, "You know, that part of the Red Sea wasn't really that deep. It was like 10 inches deep, and the Israelites just waded through the water." And the boys kind of put his head down. He was kind of discouraged. And then all of a sudden, he stood up and he started shouting even more. "Wow," he said, "God is greater than I thought. Not only did he lead the whole nation of Israel through the Red Sea, he topped it off by drowning the whole Egyptian army in 10 inches of water." You know, no matter how we look at this story, this is one of the great miracle stories of the Bible. And as a result of it, we kind of go, did it really happen? Because like, if it really happened, it's a big deal. But how are we supposed to believe in this sort of thing happening? You probably remember hearing about Joey. He went to Sunday school and he went home and he told his mom what they had learned in Sunday school, the story about the Red Sea. But when he told the story to his mom, he changed it. He said, "Mom, our teacher told us how God sent Moses behind enemy lines on a rescue mission to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. And when he got to the Red Sea, he had his engineers build a pontoon bridge and all the people walk across safely. Then he used his walkie-talkie to radio headquarters for reinforcements. And they sent bombers to blow up the bridge, and the Israelites were saved." "Now, Joey, is that really what your teacher taught?" "Well, no, Mom. But if I told you the way the teacher did, you'd never believe it." Right? I mean, this is the story of the Bible. It's one of those stories where, like, if this is true, this is huge. But I could never tell you that story in a way that you'd really believe it, because in order to believe it, you would have to believe that God was real and that God did miracles and supernatural stuff happens. And by the way, Moses is kind of a superhero. But that's exactly what I believe, and I believe it really happened. And this morning, I want us to read this story as we pay attention to Moses' ears, his fears, and his hands. Exodus chapter 14, verse 1. "Then the Lord said to Moses." Now when we speak, this is the moment where I want you to start thinking about Moses' ears. as he's listening to God. Tell the Israelites to turn back. Like they're going out of Egypt, and he says, I want you to turn this car around and go the other way. And encamp near Pi Hahiroth. Yeah, that's hard to say. Between Migdol and the sea. So they're going to be right there next to the sea. I mean, they're going to be trapped next to the sea. They are to encamp by the sea directly opposite a place called Baal Zephon. Pharaoh will think the Israelites are wandering around the land in confusion and hemmed in by the desert. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and he will pursue them. But I, this is God speaking, will gain glory for myself through Pharaoh and all his army. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord. And so the Israelites did this. Think about Moses listening to God. When the king of Egypt was told that the people had fled, Pharaoh and his officials changed their minds. And they said, what have we done? We have let the Israelites go. We've lost their services. We've lost all these slaves, basically. So he had his chariot made ready, and he took his army with him. And he took 600 of the best chariots. You know, they stand on the back of chariots with your bowmen, and they would just launch these arrows at people. He took 600 of the best chariots along with the other chariots of Egypt with officers over all of them. And the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, so that he pursued the Israelites who were marching out boldly. And the Egyptians and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen and troops. Okay, we get the picture. This is a big old army. They pursued the Israelites and they overtook them as they camped by the sea near Pi Hahiroth, the place where God had told them to go, opposite Baal Zephon. Now, as Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up. Now, what are they seeing? They're seeing an army, right? And there were the Egyptians marching after them. What do you think their reaction would be? Well, it's obvious. The text tells us they were terrified. And they cried out to the Lord. And listen to what they said to God. They said to Moses, was it because there's no graves in Egypt you brought us out in the desert to die? Is there no good place to die over in Egypt? Why don't you bring us out here? What have you done to us by bringing us out to Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, leave us alone. Let us serve the Egyptians. Now, I don't remember reading that in the Bible. It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert. They've already concluded Pharaoh's going to kill them. End of story. But don't forget about Moses' ears. And also don't forget about Moses' fears. Verse 13, Moses answered the people, do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring to you today. The Egyptians that you see today, you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still. And the Lord said to Moses, why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so they will go in after them. And I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. And the Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh and his chariots and his horsemen. Then the angel of God, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. And the pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. And throughout the night, I mean, so this is like an all-night episode. The cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hands. Remember I told you I wanted you to think about his ears, fears, and now his hands. And he stretched out his hands over the sea. And all that night, the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind, and he turned it into dry land. And the waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, no 10 inches of water here, with a wall of water on the right and on the left. And the Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen, like, hey, we're going to get them now. They're trapped. Followed them into the sea. And during the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud of the at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of the chariot so they had difficulty driving. And the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Duh, you don't know that by now. And then the Lord said to Moses, again, think about his hands. "Stretch out your hand again. Stretch it out over the sea so the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and their horsemen." And Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And at daybreak, here's the sun coming up over the horizon. The sea went back into its place. What a moment. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and the horsemen and the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and their left. And that day, the Lord saved Israel from the hands, think about that again, of the Egyptians. And Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord. They put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant, or I would call his superhero. All right, so let's look at this story this morning. If you have your outline, you want to follow along. Let me just kind of share some insights into this story about how Moses liberated a nation. First of all, with his ears, he listened to God. Part of what makes Moses a superhero in the Bible, and I think this is true of all the biblical superheroes, is that they have ears for God. They're people who listen to what God wants them to do. And in this story, we see this in several ways. First of all, we see it in his willingness to listen to God for direction. In verses 1 and 2, we're told how God would say, "Moses, I want you to take Israel this way." I mean, it's like GPS. "Now I want you to go this way. I want you to go here." And Moses is probably thinking, "Okay, God, we're kind of backtracking. Like, why do you want us to go backwards?" And of course, the reason is because God's got this bigger story. He wants Pharaoh to think that the Israelites are lost. They don't know what they're doing. But what he's really doing is he's turning them around to get them at just the right place, at just the right moment, so that God can do what God only can do. And so Moses listens for direction. But he also listens for what I'd call reaction. Because he is responding to what Pharaoh is now doing. Most of us in life, if we're going somewhere and we look behind us and there's an army chasing, we start going faster in the other direction. So think about what an incredible moment this is when Moses is like, "Hey, you see those guys over there? They're trying to kill us. What we're actually going to do is we're going to turn around and go back toward them." So this is a moment where Moses is really having to go, "Okay, God, is this really what you want me to do?" But he's really listening to God. But not only that, I would say he listens to God for wisdom. Because if you think about it, if he took his finger and put it up into the wind and said, "Okay, Israelites, what do you think we ought to do?" They'd say, "Give up. Let's go back to Egypt and be slaves again." But what it's not what he did. He doesn't listen to the people. He doesn't listen to their fears. He listens to God. A few years ago, these signs went up on billboards all over. And you probably remember the sign that says, it's just black against the white letters, and it says, you know, "God, we need to talk." Remember those signs? And I love those signs because it's kind of like you're driving down the road, and it's kind of just one of those reminders like, "Hey, did I talk to God today? Like, did I actually go, okay, God, what do you kind of want me to do with my life today?" And I think this story is one of those big reminders, like a billboard going, "Hey, folks, what about you and your life? You talking to God? You listening to his voice? You going where he's leading you to go? You listening to him?" And I think sometimes the hard part for us is we're like, "God, how do I hear you? Because life's hard. Life's just not easy." C.S. Lewis was a man who knew pain well, and he once made this comment. He said that pain insists on us being attended to. God whispers to us in our pleasures, he speaks to us in our consciences, but he shouts in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And I was just thinking about that quote this week as I was just thinking about the story, because like all of Israel's kind of going, "Okay, God, where are you?" And God's going, "Right here. Right in the midst of it. This is all a part of my big plan. I know it wasn't a part of yours. I know it's not what you wanted, but it's what I'm doing." It's a hard lesson of life. With his ears, he listened to God. But also with his fears, number two. With his fears, Moses trusted God. If you look there in verses 13 and 14, you see what he does. He says, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm. You're going to see the deliverance of God." I love that line. I got to tell you what, I'm not one of these guys that preaches and gets up here and says, I'm never afraid. I'm like afraid all the time, you know? And so I like need this. How do I handle the fears of my life? This week we were coming back from Colorado. I did a preaching retreat up there, and I was coming back, and Friday night there was this storm in New Mexico, and it's already dark, and it's like you look on the weather map, and there's like this supercell thunderstorm on this side and a supercell thunderstorm on this side, and you can just like see for miles just lightning hitting the ground everywhere. And I'm like thinking to myself, do I really want to get home that bad? You know, maybe turn around, go back to the hotel or something. Do I really want to drive through the middle of two huge storms with, like, electricity going everywhere? So Angela's, like, showing me the weather map, and, you know, there's hardly any cell phone coverage out there. And she's, like, showing me the weather map. She's like, well, it looks like we could drive right through it, one-on-one. So I'm driving, like, 80 miles an hour in the desert, and there's lightning shooting down on this side and lightning shooting down. And literally, I look over at Angela, and this is what she's doing. Like, my wife does not get scared of storms. But, I mean, when you're seeing bolt after bolt after bolt landing, like, on this side of the car and that side of the car, you start to get a little afraid. But I was thinking about after we drove past it and we're, like, looking back on the storm, we weren't afraid anymore. We're just kind of looking back and going, hey, that's pretty cool. And it's an interesting lesson. How do we handle the fears of life? Looking back on this story, we can kind of see what we're supposed to do. We can kind of see what we're supposed to do in the moment. For one thing, he tells them, basically, face your fears, verse 13. He doesn't say, like, run away. Oh, the Egyptians are coming. You better run away. No, he says, turn around, face them on, head first. Do not be afraid. When I was a kid, I often imagined this in a story form, like a little kid fighting a big dragon, right? And it's a story form. But really, when you're a kid, it actually comes to you, fear comes to you in a different form, usually. It's like you're laying there in bed, and you hear a noise under the bed, and your heart's just pounding, and you look into the closet. There was always a monster that lived in my closet. But there was this weird moment when I would be like, okay, I'm going to face this. I'm going to look down under the bed. And I don't know why, but I never saw a monster there. And I'd go into the closet, finally my heart's beating. I mean, I can hear it. And I look in there, and I turn on the light, and there's no monster in there. And there's sometimes in life when our fears are just our imagination. And as we look back on this story, we know God has written his story over this story, and the Israelites never needed to be afraid because God was with them the whole time. Face your fears. Secondly, stand firm in faith, he tells the people. Stand firm. Stand firm. Yeah, they're coming. But don't run away, because it's right here, right in this moment, right in this place of your greatest fear, that God is going to bring about his greatest deliverance. Lauren Daigle wrote the song. I love it. We sing it sometimes. And this is some of the lines in the song. It says, when you don't move the mountains, I'm needing you to move. And when you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. And when you don't give the answers as I cry out to you, I will what?
Trust.
I will trust. I will trust in you. And this is the lesson God's teaching his people in this moment, isn't it? It's like, I'm the one who's going to take care of you. Trust in me. I think there's another lesson in this story, and that is seeing your fears from God's perspective. You know, like, it's so much easier when we can look back on the storm and go, okay, it really isn't that scary. And we can kind of get the perspective of it. And what God tells them this day is, he says, the Egyptians you see today, you're never going to see them again. God already knows that he's going to solve the problem. When I'm flying in an airplane, I'm always looking down going, man, the world is small. You know? When we're kind of up above it, it doesn't seem that big. The problems don't seem that difficult. But when we're right in the midst of them, man, they seem tough. But if we could just see it from God's perspective. And then fourth, let God fight the battle for you. The text tells us that he sent 600 chariots. But the battle wasn't going to be ever between the Egyptians and the Israelites. As far as I know, no swords were drawn. Let God fight the battle for you. How many times in life, how many times do we take the battle into our own hands? And somebody once said that like fear is thinking it's all up to you. Faith is realizing it's really all up to God. In 2 Chronicles chapter 20, verse 15, God told one of his kings named Jehoshaphat and said this in 2 Chronicles 20, 15, "Listen, King Jehoshaphat, all who live in Judah and Jerusalem, this is what the Lord says. Do not be afraid or discouraged because of this vast army, for the battle is not yours, but God's." In Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 1, he says, "When you go out to battle against your enemies and you see horses and chariots and people more numerous than you, do not be afraid of them." Like God told them before they went out there, don't be afraid of them. The Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, he is with you. And then the last thing is, not only with his ears and his fears, Moses is a superhero with his hands because he obeyed God. In verse 16, like the moment finally came and God said, "I want you, Moses, to stretch out your staff. I want you to reach out your hands." And that's what Moses did. In verse 21 and verse 26, it's exactly what Moses did. And as I was thinking about that just this week, I was thinking, you know, in life, there is a time to weep. There is a time to cry out, a time to pray. I mean, there are moments in life when all we need to do most is just to weep and to grieve and to be sad. There are moments when we just need to cry out to God. There are a lot of moments in life when we just need to pray. But there are some times when we don't need to do those things. What we need to do is we need to act. There's a time for action. This is an incredible thing to think about. Moses is right there on the brink of everything going bad or everything being saved. And God's like, "This is what I want you to do. I want you to raise your hands." What if God had said, "No, God, let's just talk about it for a while. Maybe tomorrow we can do it. It's getting dark, you know? Kind of hard to move a whole, you know, nation through a sea in the middle of the night. Why don't we wait till the sun comes up? Why don't we wait till another time?" You know, in life, there's a time to pray, there's a time to weep, there's a time to cry out, but there's also a time for action. And I think there's a really deep sort of great Christian truth here, a great moral of life. And I kind of cautiously say this because it doesn't sound like something you'd hear in church, but it's true. Don't let your prayers ever become an excuse for disobedience. My church in Austin, there was a man, I always think about this. He was a wonderful guy. Like if I introduced you to him, every one of you in this room would like him. He's a great guy, a man of prayer, just really open, hospitable. He invited us over to his home. We were just good friends. And one day he told me, he said, "David," he said, "for years I had this idea, and I really believe God has given me this idea." I said, "Well, what is it? Sounds great." He said, "Well, I have this idea because there's so many people in Austin who don't know Jesus that we could have like a block party in my community and I could invite all my neighbors to come over and we could cook, you know, hamburgers or whatever. And I get to know my neighbors and see the ones who might want to come to a Bible study." You know, he's telling me this thing and it's like, that sounds like a really good idea. In fact, I literally said to him, "Why don't we go ahead and start planning that right now?" This is what he said to me. This is what he said to me. He said, "No. We need to pray about it." That was 9 years ago. As far as I know, in these 9 years, he's never done it. And I'm just kind of like thinking to myself, you know, there are times in life when God's like, "Hey, I want you to do this. It's not time to pray about it. It's just time to do it. It's not time to talk about it. It's just time to do it. The army's coming. God says, stretch out your hands. Open the sea. Save my people." It's a time to act. And this is part of what makes Moses, I think, in the Bible, a superhero because of what he does here. And let's read it. Verse 21, "Moses stretched out his hand over the sea. And that night the Lord drove the sea back in the strong east wind, and he turned it into a dry land." Verse 23, "The Egyptians pursued, but then in verse 26, the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hands again, but this time over the sea so the waters will flow back. They looked at the hands of the Egyptians that were coming. But then in verse 31, when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of the Lord, the people feared the Lord, and they put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant.